unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation. The Eternal Life. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Life, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, The Head of the Table, has been written for radio by Irv Tunick. Peter Capel will be featured as Dr. Israel Kligler. From Jerusalem, looking up from Jerusalem, up from the shadowed antiquity of the old city of Jerusalem, the Hebrew University crowns the heights of Mount Scopus, its towers barely seen above the cedars and the palms. This was his workshop. On Scopus, Mount Scopus, the Mount of the Beacon, where today atomic physics is being taught in the language of Isaiah, where the student of the Talmud shares his library life with the student of agronomy, this was his laboratory. Here the little man, the very little man, barely 5 feet tall, the man with the shy smile and thick-lensed glasses, here in the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, Israel Kligler labored in the purpose of man.
In answer to your recent letter, I shall try to aid you by recalling some facts and disillusioning you about others regarding the background of my brother, Dr. Israel Kligler. We lived in a province of Austria that is now a part of Poland. Our father was a cattle dealer in a small town and was fairly successful. We were six children, and it took a lot of providing. Our mother died in 1898. In 1900, Father left for America and established himself in business on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. My brother Israel was only about 12 when Father left Europe. He had been known in our town as the best student, the best by far, in the Hebrew school. He spent his whole day studying with the chief rabbi, and all that he talked about, all that he dreamed about, was to be a rabbi. One day, Father sent for us. He had worked hard and saved hard. And somehow, there was enough to pay our passage. You can imagine what excitement was produced.
Where's Israel? He's not packed yet. Not anything, Irving. We're gonna be late.
Did he say where he went? Where did he go?
Should I pack this coat, this old coat? Look, it has no elbows in the sleeve.
Don't pack it, wear it.
But I'm wearing three coats already.
How much you wear, that's how much you won't have to carry. The candlesticks. Don't forget the candlesticks.
Where should I wear the candlesticks?
You put them in the bundle.
Here's Israel. Here he is now. He's here.
Israel, we only have an hour, less than an hour. Now hurry up and start packing.
I'm not leaving.
What?
What?
I'm staying here.
What do you mean? We've got to...
Israel, listen. They are coming for us with the carriage in less than an hour.
I'm not going. I don't want to go.
But you gotta go.
I can stay with a rabbi. In the rabbi's house. I can work in the synagogue, cleaning up, doing things.
Please, Israel, everything is mixed up enough. Don't you start. Put on all those clothes we put aside for you. You'll have to wear three pairs of pants and two...
Goodbye.
What?
Goodbye. Tell Father I'm sorry. Tell him... Tell him goodbye.
Israel, come back. Come back here, Israel. Now
what? Everything.
Oh, keep on with the packing.
Where are you going?
To the rabbi's house to get Israel. Make him come, Rabbi. He's got to come with us. He can't stay here.
I can stay here. Can I stay here, Rabbi?
You can stay, Israel. Of course you can stay.
There, you see?
But you mustn't stay.
But why? Tell me why.
Because you are young. Because this is an evil country.
I don't care. Here with you, I can study. I can learn what I want to learn. I don't want to go anyplace else. This is the only place I want to be.
Israel, in the next town only, how far away is that? In the next town, they have had pogroms. They are coming here soon. Do you think they won't come?
Let them come.
You can study in America. They have schools in America, don't they, Rabbi?
I've been told so.
There.
But who would care about me in America? Who would care if I worked or if I didn't work? Who would know? If I did study, suppose I did. Suppose I could. If I did study, who would think that was important? In America, I know, I've read this. In America, it is important to wear fine clothes and have your own carriage. And people are so busy making money that they don't care about a scholar. Isn't that right, Rabbi?
Well, I don't know, Israel.
I want to study the Talmud. I want to be like the rabbi. I want other people from all over to come to me and ask me about the Talmud. Ask me questions the way they do the rabbi. Who would ask about the Talmud in America? Even if I became a great scholar in America, what good would that be? This is where that matters, not in America.
Israel, I will tell you a story. Will you listen?
Yes.
Once in a little village, there was a very wise man, a sage, a man of great distinction. But he was extremely modest. He disliked being honored. Well, this wise man was once invited to a banquet. The host wished to seat him at the head of the table, which, according to custom, was his due. Are you listening, Israel?
Yes.
Well, when the wise man came into the room where the banquet was taking place, he modestly chose a seat among the poor at the foot of the table. The host immediately arose and asked his other guests to take their places alongside of the scholar at the foot of the table. When one of them demurred, said that he was accustomed only to the honor of being placed at the head of the table, the host replied, "My master, wherever our scholar sits, there is the head of the table." You understand the meaning of that, Israel?
Yes, sir. I see.
Wherever you go, if you go in the light of the Lord, there is the place of honor. It is late, Israel. They will be coming for you soon.
I won't be late. I'll be ready.
The city, the ugliness of the city, the dissonance of the city, trains roaring overhead, the constant thunder of the city, strange tongues lashing strange words as he fumbled his way through the city. This was his welcome to America. The schoolrooms, the long stacks of books in the library, the flicker of gaslight on the small print of thick books. This was the treasure of the city.
I just got my card. It's a new card.
I'm perfectly aware of that fact. You have 6 books here.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
You may take only 4.
Only 4?
Only 4.
Please, I...
Those are the regulations. They're printed on your card.
But I can't come back for another week. I work during the day, and I can't come during the day. Only on this afternoon.
Well, take 4 now and 2 next week.
But 4 books will only last 4 days.
That's ridiculous. You can't read an entire book in one day.
Sure I can. Sometimes more. Thick books, they take longer, but the skinny ones, they go fast.
At that rate, you'll have read your way through the library in 6 months.
I was thinking about that.
What will you do then? Start all over?
No, ma'am. I'll just go to the big library uptown. They'll have enough to last me lots longer.
I have your letter requesting information about Israel Kliegler, which I hasten to answer. As you know, he was both a student and colleague of mine. I consider him one of the two products of my 30 years of teaching, of whom I'm most proud. The remarkable thing, the thing I best remember about Kliegler, was his intensity, his enormous industry, the fervor with which he applied himself to every job he tackled. I'm certain that his early Talmudic training, the discipline it taught him, was reflected in his scientific accomplishments. If Palestine today is actively free of malaria, that achievement is almost exclusively due to Kliegler, to his energy and his readiness to give his whole personality to his great experiment. Have you ever heard the story of Mulacha, an Arab village in the Hula region of Palestine? It was during the Second World War, the early years of the war.
Get a gang over here, rip down the side of this ditch. Tompkins, can you spare a couple of men with shovels?
Right away.
Now hurry it up. We haven't got all day. Get a push on. Come on.
Don't tear down that guy. What are you trying to do here?
Who are you?
Stop it, all of you. Stop it.
Now what is this? What do you mean, barking?
I'm Israel Kliegler.
Oh, Kliegler, connected with the malaria station at Rosh Pina. Know of you, of course.
Why are these irrigation dikes being torn down?
Flooding the fields.
What?
That's right. Government's decided to grow rice on this land.
You can grow rice without flooding the fields.
Wouldn't doubt it, but the orders are to flood the fields, and that's exactly what I intend to do.
You know what you're doing. You know what will happen if you flood these fields.
Certainly, they'll get wet.
Listen.
Oh, bosh. Come on now.
Listen to me. If you flood these fields, you'll be committing murder. Murder, do you hear that? Murder.
I'm afraid
For over 20 years, we've been fighting to cleanse this region of malaria. And we've done it. They said it couldn't be done, but we did it. Before we came, before we started our work, almost every Arab child born here during the spring and summer months died before its first birthday. When I first came to Palestine, this place wasn't a country. It was a graveyard. This entire region, all this land around Lake Hule was...
I don't know why you're so concerned, Kliegler. This isn't your land we're flooding.
Do you think a malaria mosquito knows the difference between a farm owned by an Arab and a farm owned by a Jew? Is there any difference? Listen, if you flood these fields, if you reopen the door to malaria, the door we've been fighting to keep shut, everybody in this area, Jews, Arabs, English, everybody will suffer. In one day, you'll undo the work of 20 years.
Well, that's just going to be too bad. I've got orders. You can see for yourself, if you like. The administration says if the fields are to be flooded, and flooded they will be.
Wait a day. A few hours. Let me wire Jerusalem.
No, sir. Orders are orders. And you'd better move out of the way.
But...
because if you don't, you'll get your feet wet.
There was nothing to do, nothing that Kliegler could do. His labor of years, the almost total elimination of malaria from the marshlands of northern Palestine, a scientific accomplishment that had won him the unrestrained admiration of every public health authority in the world, all this was sacrificed to a policy of the moment, short-sighted, tragic, cruel. Kliegler from his laboratory in the Hebrew University wrote me about it. He told me what would happen. A year later, it did happen. A delegation of Arabs came to him.
I will speak for the others, Dr. Kliegler.
All right.
We are from the village of Mulacha in Hula.
Oh, yes.
It has been very bad with us.
I know. I've seen the reports of your village. We sent as much medicine as we could. Whatever we could.
There is a death in the village every day. Sometimes two, sometimes three.
Why did you flood your fields?
To grow rice.
Rice. Were there any men left to harvest the crop?
We were ordered.
If you were ordered to slit the throat of your son, would you do it?
The orders came from the administration.
I know, I know.
Many years ago, you first came to us, Dr. Kliegler. Do you remember me? I was only a young man then. My father was the muhtar of the village. When you came to our house, you gave my little sister lemon drops.
That was many years ago. How do you remember?
I remember. After the first few years of your work, after you struggled to get my people to understand about malaria, to drain the swamps, to cover all water, to live like men and not cattle. After that, when a child born on a feast day might live to see another feast day. After that, the people of my village, in gratitude, had the feast in your honor. Do you remember that, Dr. Kligler?
Yes, I remember.
Well, when the feast was over, after you had gone, when the men of the village were sitting around having their final smoke, it was decided then, it was agreed, that you, Dr. Kligler, you were the smallest man ever to sit at the head of our table.
He had been very young when he first arrived in Palestine. Some thought much too young. The welcoming group had stood in the shade of the railroad shed of Jerusalem, and they wondered about this new chief bacteriologist of the Hadassah Medical Organization. Most of them had thought, too young, and so small. Young? Yes. He had only barely passed his 30th year. But already he had battled yellow fever in the infested swamps of Mexico and Peru. Young? Yes, only 6 years out of college. Yet he had stood at the side of the immortal Noguchi and flung his challenge at the death that came with a mosquito's hum. And when he had done what everyone said could never be done, when he had shown that malaria could be controlled in Palestine, that the malaria-ridden land could be farmed, then they said, he may be young, he may be small, but he's good.
I'm sorry to be so late in responding to your request for information about Dr. Israel Kligler. Being a nurse in Palestine these days hardly leaves one time for correspondence. I first met Dr. Kligler in 1926, the year he was appointed professor of hygiene and bacteriology at the Hebrew University. He was already well known in Palestine. His work with malaria had made his name a household word from Hula to the Negev. He continued his malaria work, but in the university, he slowly began to turn his attention to another scourge of the tropics, typhus fever, a disease that had already claimed a score of investigators. He developed a vaccine that worked beautifully on our laboratory animals. But as you probably know, in bacteriology, that's only half the story. One night we were working late, quite late.
Well, there's nothing more we can do. You have your entries up to date?
Right up to the minute.
Fine.
Are you going to publish this, Doctor?
Should I?
Of course.
Why should I?
Because it's important.
What? That we can prevent typhus in monkeys?
Yes.
The important thing is to prevent it in man.
But this will.
How do we know? We don't, do we?
No, but we must find...
But we must find out exactly. My dear, do you happen to have a really lusty little bug that's just bubbling over with typhus organisms?
Yes, of course.
Bring him out.
But I...
Quickly.
Yes, sir.
The alcohol, please.
Dr. Kligler, don't do it.
Don't do what? Let me have that happen, Danny.
You're going to test the vaccine on yourself.
That's right.
Don't do it.
Didn't you say our vaccine would prevent typhus? You are sure of it?
Yes, but that doesn't mean...
I think it will prevent it, too. Here, give me a shot of the vaccine. About 25 cc.
I don't...
Before the alcohol dries.
Yes, sir.
Good. Now the bung. Be careful. Keep the gauze over the mouth of the test tube. Just slip the open end against my arm. Let the hungry little beggar feed.
Yes, sir.
It's hard to believe that the lowly little body louse can carry so much death. And it's true.
It's feeding now.
Enter this in the ledger. Call it human experiment number one.
Fever 102.4. Pulse 110. irregular.
Still too early to tell. Much too early.
Fever 104.3. Pulse 125. Irregular.
Another few hours, Mattel. Another few hours. Well?
I can't see well in this light. Let me take it over to the lamp. Dr. Kliegler, it's down. Your fever is down. It's almost normal.
Good. Very good. Not perfect yet, but very good.
Later, in Aden, on the hot fingertip of Asia Minor, he would fight a raging epidemic of typhus among 1,600 people in Yemen, an ancient people stricken with an ancient disease. Almost alone, almost barehanded, he would win his battle. Later still, an appeal came for his vaccine from the Polish Red Cross. 55,000 doses were manufactured and forwarded by the Department of Bacteriology and Hygiene of the Hebrew University. There was new life for 2,000 Polish soldiers, new strength for the Allied armies. And for Kliegler, a speech by the Polish...
In the sanctuaries of science, examples of the most sublime heroism are frequent. Cases where the scientist gives his life exactly like the soldier on the battlefield. Today, we have the honor to see one of those silent heroes among us. I refer, of course, to our distinguished guest, Dr. Israel Kliegler.
Professor Israel Kliegler stood on tiptoe. The consul general stooped.
There you are.
And pinned the medal on his breast.
I am very happy that my first letter to you about my memory of Israel Kliegler contained the information you desired. But I wonder if you also have heard of his greatest disappointment. Let me tell you about it. After Kliegler's typhus vaccine had proved successful, just about the time the United States entered the war, Kliegler returned to America. He realized that American troops would soon be going to the Near East by the thousands, perhaps by the hundreds of thousands. In this corner of the world, typhus is endemic. The possibility of an outbreak among the troops was more than theoretical. As a precautionary measure, Kliegler proposed to manufacture his typhus vaccine in quantities large enough to meet any emergency, to do it at the Hebrew University, where it would be available at a moment's notice. He spent several months here in Washington, most of the time going from one office to another. Nothing happened. Red tape. One day here in Washington, I met him for lunch.
I don't know what to do. What would you do?
Well, it's a difficult decision.
From what I gather, the Army may decide to send a commission to Palestine for typhus work at any moment. I've got to go with them. I've got to be on the spot. There's no one else that can get them to set up a research center in the Hebrew University. And now, at this stage of the game, I get this letter from the refugee colony in the Dominican Republic asking me to come down and help them set up a sanitation program.
Well, how bad are things there?
It must be bad. Reading between the lines, you can see how bad. Invite me, that's what the letter says, but I know better. This isn't an invitation, this is an appeal. They need help, and they are begging me to come there and help them fight malaria, yellow fever, and every other tropical disease in the book.
What are you going to do?
You've read the letter, haven't you?
Yes.
Could you refuse their appeal?
No.
Neither can I.
He was gone only a few weeks when I learned that the commission had been appointed, that a plane had been chartered to take them to Palestine, and that it was due to leave in 24 hours. I sent a wire to Israel at once, but by the time he arrived, the plane had left without him. He tried to get passage on another plane. The State Department and the English ambassador did everything possible. But the army controlled priorities, and finally there was nothing left but for him to take a freighter to Dakar. From there, he took a plane to Cairo, then by auto to the university.
Dr. Kliegler, welcome home. Did you just get back?
Yes. The United States Army Commission. Where are they?
They left 3 days ago.
What about the Typhus Research Center? Did they say anything about it?
They said they would set it up, but not here. Not in Palestine.
I will not say that this disappointment was the direct cause of Israel's death, but I do know how much he'd set his heart on the project. He felt that only the United States could make sufficient money available to do all the work and research that was needed to be done in the Near East. And he felt, too, that this work could only be done in the Hebrew University, the true scientific heart of that part of the world. He was on an inspection trip to the malaria research stations near Lake Eula when he was stricken suddenly by a heart attack.
Get some water, quickly. Please, somebody get him some water.
I wonder...
What? What is it, Dr. Cleveland?
I wonder...
Shh. Don't talk.
Where are we now?
They've taken you into the dining hall. It's cool here. The ambulance will be here soon.
The dining hall. Let me see. Lift me up a little.
Please. Very well.
Thank you. Ah. You see, at the foot. No. At the head of the table.
From Jerusalem, looking up from Jerusalem, up from the shadowed antiquity of the old city of Jerusalem, the Hebrew University crowns the heights of Mount Scopus, its towers barely seen above the cedars and the palms. This was his laboratory. And do not think it is locked, for it is not. Israel Kliegler still works in the Hebrew University. His books are still there, his students are there, his spirit is there. As truth never dies, neither does knowledge. Today, high on Mount Scopus, in the midst of turmoil, in a land of battle lines and armored convoys, they are building. Mortar is being poured and walls are going up. And from every direction, people are massing, waiting for the road to Scopus to be freed again. Waiting to join hands in a quest for the indestructible, for knowledge, and for truth. Our eternal light drama today, The Head of the Table, was written by Irv Funich. The music was composed and conducted by Morris Momorsky. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Peter Capel was heard as Dr. Israel Kliegler, and Bryna Rayburn as the nurse. The entire production was under the direction of Edward King. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America in cooperation with the National Broadcasting Company. If you have any comments or inquiries about today's broadcast, please write to Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York City. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.